There's quite a list of diseases that our grandparents and their parents dreaded that we really have not had to worry much about. Measles is on that list. We thought we'd wiped out measles around the turn of this century, but it's a stubborn player, and cases are on the rise in both Oregon and California, along with many other parts of the country. The number of measles cases approaches 300 across America. As a percentage of the population, it may not be much, but again, measles was supposed to be gone by now. Dr. Paul Cieslak is the head of the Infectious Disease Program at the Oregon Public Health Division and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Dr. Cieslak, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you.
So what is the current situation in Oregon? We have a piece here that looks like it's about a week old, indicating 5 cases at that time. Has there been a boost since then?
No, thankfully, we're holding at 5 cases so far in 2014, all among unvaccinated people.
Okay, and I can just imagine people saying, well, 5 cases, pff, that's no big deal. We're only halfway through the year. But the fact is, compare this to last year's numbers, if you would.
Well, last year we had a total of 6, but I will say that these last 2 years have been increases over the previous several. We tend to be running 0 to 2 or 3 cases a year for more than a decade now. So 5 and 6 does seem to represent a little bit of an increase. But I don't want to make more of it than it is. What worries me is not so much 5 cases, but the potential for what could happen if one of those cases lands among a large group of unimmunized children.
And that is the issue. Is it vaccinations primarily that are driving the increase?
Well, I think what's mostly driving the increase this year is a lot of importations. Now, some of those importations, like in Oregon in particular, have hit families where there have been unvaccinated people, and that's when you see spread. If you get an importation from another country that's having a measles epidemic, like the Philippines has been lately, and it lands in a typical population where almost everybody is either vaccinated or immune because, like me, they're old enough to have had the disease, then the disease isn't going to go anywhere. It's got nobody to transmit to. But put it in a school full of kids whose parents are declining immunizations, and we're going to see a lot of illness.
There is that Oregon law, and I can't honestly remember if it was the 2013 or 2014 legislature that specified some slightly more rigorous, some more hoops to jump through if you wanted to get the exemption for your child. Are those even in effect yet? Did they go into effect with this school year, or are they going to affect next school year?
Well, effectively next school year. They formally took effect on March 1st, but that was after the exclusion day for lack of immunizations, which occurs in February every year. So they waited till after exclusion day for this school year. So parents who want to claim an exemption for any non-medical reason for the 2014-2015 school year are going to have to get certified that they receive some education about vaccines and the diseases they prevent.
Now, I noticed that the vaccination exemption rate for kindergartners was 1% in the year 2000, 6.4% as of the most recent set of numbers. Any reason, Dr. Cieslak, to believe it's a generational thing and would potentially turn around by itself?
No, I have seen a relentless increase since the year 2000, just a little bit every year consistently. We actually just got the latest numbers for the current school year, and it's 7%, so it's gone from 6.4 to 7%. No sign of any decline. I think a lot of parents have questions about the vaccine. They may have had a friend who told them something or seen something on the internet, and it's legitimate to want to get your questions answered. We hope that the information module that we've developed, or the information that doctors will be giving parents before they can claim an exemption, will be reassuring to people and say, a lot of these diseases are still out there, and the vaccines have been tried and true, hundreds of millions of doses administered, and are pretty safe.
Ultimately, though, you get down to an issue where you've got a parent thinking that the vaccination is potentially worse than the disease they could catch without it. And how do you approach that viewpoint?
Right. I think the only tool I have at my disposal is information, and it's information about the disease and its complications. For example, most people who get measles do okay with it. But a percentage of people, maybe 5%, especially if you're adolescents, will get pneumonia from it and land in the hospital. And about 1 in 2,000 in developed countries in recent years who get measles die from it. So there is a mortality rate. Now, you might say, you know, shoot, I'll take my chances with one in 2,000. But that's a pretty high mortality. And back in the day when everybody got measles because nobody got vaccinated, essentially, you know, the whole birth cohort in Oregon, which is more than 40,000 kids, would get measles. And if one in 2,000 dies, that's 20 deaths a year you'd be seeing from measles. So, you know, it's nothing to shake a stick at. And that's just measles. Diphtheria has a much higher mortality rate than that. So we, you know, want to remind parents that the diseases are there. They can be serious. And the vaccines, again, have been given to many, many, many people without side effects. So, you know, the horror stories you hear about vaccines, you have to weigh against the rarity with which a bad side effect occurs and the disease that they're designed to prevent.
And what are some of the symptoms of measles? I mean, I think we've all heard about the red spots and stuff, but, you know, honestly, since it's been so rare, and I don't think I've ever been around a person who had it myself, I have no idea what the other symptoms are.
Well, right. I mean, thankfully, we don't see much of it anymore. I continue to believe that measles represents a great public health victory. I mean, we've come back from the day when essentially everybody got the disease and some of them died of it to the point where it's kind of a curiosity. Nobody remembers exactly what it looks like. But you get a fever, first of all, and then you get what we call a prodrome, kind of the preliminary symptoms before you get the characteristic rash. And this prodrome is, well, doctors will know it as the three C's, cough, coryza, conjunctivitis. And in layperson's terms, coryza means like a head cold, runny nose, and conjunctivitis is inflammation of the eyes, red eyes typically. So you get a cough, a runny nose, red eyes, a fever, and then the rash breaks out. And it typically starts on the face and moves south, if you will, and ultimately covers essentially the whole body. And, you know, the kids can be pretty miserable during this period. You know, it's not just that their skin is red, but they're feeling pretty cruddy because the virus is running rampant through their body. And until their immune system can overcome it, they're going to be feeling lousy. And that's kind of best case scenario that, as I say, a percentage of kids will have it develop into pneumonia, where they'll have to be hospitalized for that. And then uncommonly, but significantly, you can get a brain inflammation from the measles virus that can be pretty nasty.
I noticed that. Encephalitis, so that's about
exactly.
1 in 1,000 cases?
Something like that, yeah. I don't have the numbers with me.
We're talking about measles and the fact that the cases are on the rise around the country. Dr. Paul Cieslak, who's the head of the Infectious Disease Program at the Oregon Public Health Division. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your questions, your comments. Maybe you've been around somebody who had measles. Maybe you had it yourself and can relate to some of the things we're talking about here. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned some of the other countries where measles cases are still fairly prevalent. The Philippines was one you mentioned where there's been, I think you said, 20 deaths already. What's the issue there that there are still countries that, I mean, the technology is available, but why is the vaccine not getting out of the countryside in places like the Philippines?
Right. I mean, I can't speak specifically to the Philippines. I do know that in recent years when there have been large outbreaks in Europe, for example, you know, a lot of developed countries that once upon a time had high vaccination rates, but they saw the same thing. They saw a lot of parents who were questioning the use of the vaccine. You could statistically watch the vaccination rates drop, and then eventually measles hits, and it gets sustained. So measles is one of the most contagious diseases we know of. It's truly spread by the airborne route. If I've got measles and I cough in the room and walk out, and then you walk into my room an hour later, you could get measles just from having breathed the air that I coughed into.
An hour later? Really?
Yeah. So it's really very, very contagious. And it can find, even when you've got an 80% vaccination rate, for example, it'll find the 20% who aren't vaccinated, and you'll get sustained transmission, case after case after case, and generation of cases after generation of cases. So these outbreaks were propagated for long periods of time in France and Germany and Switzerland, and also in Japan several years ago. Now, in Japan, they just undertook a vaccination campaign to try to get you know, their rates up to 9,500% for their school children, and that's having a good effect, and I think is ending measles there as well. But for many years, you know, when you had a case of measles in Oregon, it was because somebody got here, not from one of the developing countries in our own hemisphere, not from Central or South America, where vaccination rates are very high, but from developed countries because they let their vaccination rates sag. And so from Japan and Europe is where most of the cases came from.
So it's not just an American thing, then. I mean, the vaccination rate sagging sounds like a fairly common thing.
Right. It's common in developed countries. And I think what happens is that, you know, a lot of parents start to question things. And it's hard to get your questions answered. You know, it's not easy to get an appointment with the doctor and spend a lot of his time asking all the questions. And a lot of people will check out the Internet. And, you know, you can find anything on the Internet. Some of it's true, you know, but a lot of it isn't. And I think parents get... you know, get fed some bad information sometimes. So we're hopeful that with the requirement that they get some instruction either from their doctor or from the online educational module that they'll be reassured and go, okay, I mean, I had some questions. Thank you for answering them. Let's go ahead and get the shot.
We are talking again about measles and the rise in cases around the country with Dr. Paul Cieslak, who's the head of the Infectious Disease Program at the Oregon Public Health Division. I know the folks on the California side are wondering about the cases there. I did get a chance to check. We've got 5 thus far this year in Oregon. Figure 10 times the population in California, and bingo, there's 60 cases thus far in California this year, including 1 in Humboldt County and 1 in Shasta County in our listening area. So definitely some measles cases out there. The measles vaccine, Dr. Cieslak, is delivered as part of a triple set, isn't it?
Right. It's part of MMR, measles, mumps, rubella. And mumps and rubella are can be nasty diseases as well. Rubella, I guess, in particular, because if you're a pregnant woman when you get it, it can be devastating for the baby who gets infected while in the uterus. It can cause birth defects and mental retardation. And so we definitely want to prevent any babies from getting rubella. The good news about those diseases is that they're not as contagious as measles. And so even though we've got, you know, 7% of kindergartners whose parents are claiming exemption to vaccination, we still feel that, you know, we're not seeing a lot of transmission of rubella or mumps in the state of Oregon.
What is the age at which the MMR is usually administered?
12 to 15 months of age is when it's recommended. Now, if you have an infant who's at least 6 months of age and you're traveling overseas, like to some place where there's still a lot of measles, there's a recommendation that you give the infant the shot, you know, even though they're not 12 months of age yet, because, you know, it may work and you're likely to be exposed to a lot of measles in those countries. So that's sort of an exception for infants who are traveling overseas. But in general, in the United States, it's 12 to 15 months of age, and then a booster at preschool, 4 to 6 years of age.
What was I reading about the immunoglobulin for some kids under 12 months?
Right, because the vaccine doesn't work as reliably in the young immune system under 12 months of age. So if you know that an infant has been exposed to the measles virus, you know, you've got a confirmed case who lives with them or something, then you definitely want to give the baby immune globulin because it's the only way to get some immunity into the baby quickly, and measles can be particularly bad in infants. But I would add, though, that that's, you know, the fact that there are people out there too young to be vaccinated, and there are some people who have immunocompromising diseases, you know, maybe they're on chemotherapy for cancer or for on some immunomodulator therapy for rheumatoid arthritis or something, and they cannot be vaccinated because it's a live virus vaccine. It's weakened, but we don't give it to people whose immune systems are weakened also. And, you know, the only way we know to protect them is to make sure that everybody around them is vaccinated. So even if you're not worried about measles in yourself or your own child, you know, please consider that if they get it, they might expose somebody who cannot be vaccinated.
So, Dr. Cieslak, is there any variation in what people can get in the way of a measles vaccine, or in this case, the measles, mumps, rubella? I mean, if they would prefer to have the killed vaccine rather than the live but weakened vaccine, I mean, is that option even available to them in any way?
No, I don't believe so. I think the only vaccines we've ever had against those three diseases in particular have been live virus vaccines, at least for the past 50 years or so. It's always been live virus vaccines.
Now, what about differences in timing? If they just don't feel right about getting their kids vaccinated between 12 and 15 months, I mean, if they wait until the kid is 2 years old or something, I mean, what's the outlook there?
Well, the only problem with that is that if you miss an opportunity to vaccinate, you've missed an opportunity to vaccinate, and you're banking on the notion that you're definitely going to have another opportunity, which doesn't always happen. I mean, life gets in the way. There aren't as many doctor appointments typically for toddlers as there are for infants, and so there's this immunization schedule that's been developed, in part at least, to try to take advantage of the well baby check schedule. So, the shots are given at the well baby checks. And if you're trying to do it off that schedule, then you're going to end up having to make a lot of additional appointments in order to get all the recommended shots into the child. And it's hard to do that. I mean, a lot of times you have both parents working, doctors are busy, so it involves scheduling difficulties. And our data suggests that, in a lot of cases, it just doesn't happen. I mean, once you've kind of fallen off the schedule, there's some likelihood that you'll never catch up, and a lot of likelihood that that you'll be pretty delayed, even if you can manage to catch up.
Oops, we didn't get that shot at the well baby checkup at 14 months, and so it just never happened.
Right, right. That's our big concern is, you have a good intention to go ahead and get the shot only on a slightly different time schedule, but life gets in the way and it doesn't happen, and now you're, trying to get the child into school and you need a whole bunch of shots before you can do it.
Should anybody think they have measles, what's the first thing they should be doing?
Well, call your doctor. One of the things we don't want is people just dropping in on their doctor with a disease that's as contagious as measles is, because you end up exposing everybody in the waiting room. And, of course, if you're going to a family practitioner or pediatrician, there may be infants in the waiting room who aren't vaccinated. So avoid that by calling beforehand. And if you need to be seen, arrange to be seen, out in the parking lot or somewhere where nobody else will be exposed.
Okay. Measles still rare, but less rare as time goes on, it would appear, because of the blame falls on vaccine exemptions. Dr. Paul Cieslak is the head of the Infectious Disease Program at the Oregon Public Health Division. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. We'll talk about student loans and the issues there in hour two coming up.